If you haven't been around, we've been studying what's called the Sermon on the Mount. It's Jesus' first teaching that was recorded. It's his longest teaching that's recorded, and it's his most popular recorded teaching. And in his teaching there is a lot of different statements that have come into the vernacular of Western culture. Like we talk about things like an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. Or we talk about blessed are the poor. Or we say do not judge. I mean, there's just all kinds of statements that come from the Sermon on the Mount and that are just part of our everyday language. And oftentimes people, when people hear them, they don't even know that that's where they're from. They just hear people talk about them and hear people say them. So that's what we've been studying, and we're going to continue. Last week we talked about marriage, divorce, and remarriage. And week before we talked about lust and adultery. Well, today it's no wonder that Jesus is going to, what we're going to talk about today follows after marriage and divorce and the topic there. Partially because probably in our culture the most popular place that people make vows, let me use that word, that make vows is at a wedding. I mean, everybody who's married in this room, one way or another, made a vow. You know, you made these promises. And that's oftentimes, you know, the word oath and the word vows, those words are used interchangeably, or swear, not swear in a curse word, but swear, you know, promise on something. Those words are kind of used interchangeably in the Old Testament and the New Testament. Most often we don't use it, we don't say, well, I did my wedding vow. But, you know, just not very often we make vows, use that word. But you just could use the word promise. Interchange that word in there, the word promise. And what Jesus is doing in this portion of the Sermon on the Mount is he's taking them from what we're calling the letter of the law, and he's taking them deeper into the spirit behind the letter of the law. Okay, so because there's always a letter, there's, you know, he's talking about the letter of the law, but he's really wanting to dig deeper into what's behind that law. So here's the passage. And it'll be up on your screen. And we're partway through Matthew chapter 5. You have also heard that our ancestors were told, you must not break your vows. You must carry out the vows you make to the Lord. But I say, do not make any vows. Do not say by heaven, because heaven is God's throne. And do not say by earth, because earth is his footstool. And do not say by Jerusalem, for Jerusalem is the city of the great king. Do not say by my head, for you can't turn one hair white or black. Well, now we can with modern technology, but back then. And just say a simple yes, I will, or no, I won't. Anything beyond this is from the evil one. Now, if you want a great background behind promises and oaths and, you know, solemn oaths and all those things from historical perspective, Rocky, our youth pastor, did a teaching on that on December 31st, and because it was the first of the year, and people making all kinds of New Year's resolutions, so he talked about that. You can go to our Facebook page, you can go to our YouTube page, you can find a great teaching on him giving the background. I'm not going to go into all the background today, but I'm going to talk about this vows and oaths and about telling the truth. That's what I'm going to talk about today. And And when the vows and or promises are typically used kind of in three ways. If you think about this, we promise we're going to do something. Okay, just think about this. We make a vow. I'm going to do something. You know, at the wedding, I said, you know, I'm going to love and cherish my wife. I'm going to, you know, be faithful to her, all those kinds of things. Baby dedications, parents get up here with their kid, and they say, we're going to do our best to raise this child in the Lord. You know, so we make all those things, loan papers and so on. We vow we're going to do something. We also make vows or promises to people that we're not going to do something. Say, I won't do that again. I'm done doing that. I won't bring my dog over and walk it in your yard so it poops in your yard instead of my yard anymore. Okay, you know, that kind of, and we make promises that we won't do something. And then we make promises about the truthfulness of what we're saying. I swear, I'm telling you the truth. I promise, I'm telling you the truth. It's the truth, it's the truth. And we make, and when we do that, the underlying thing, just think about this, the underlying thing about promising that you're telling the truth or swear to God that I'm telling the truth is that what? What's the underlying thing? Is that you're not telling the truth, or that most people don't tell the truth. And so you're trying to convince them that you really are telling them the truth. So those are kind of the common ways we use this idea of, vows and promises and so on. And so we'll, you know, and swearing, again, it's not the foul language. It's like, I swear to God. Swear to God. You know, kind of, people say that all the time. You hear it on TV. I swear to God. What does the scripture say? Don't do it. But anyway, he says, or we, you know, we do this, like, I'm telling the truth. Cross my heart. Hope to die. Poke a needle in my eye. You know, kind of thing. And you know, that has a really old background behind it. Did you know that? I mean, there's a, like, it's been around for a long, long time. But here's what Jesus said. You have also heard that our ancestors were told, you must not break your vows. You must carry out the vows you make to the Lord. Interesting thing in Jesus, this, of all of the statements that Jesus makes like this, and we got about five more to go, of all of the statements Jesus makes like this, where you've heard the ancestors say, but I tell you, this is the closest one to where Jesus contradicts the Old Testament. All of the other ones, he kind of, you know, he rubs on it, and then he goes deeper behind it. In this one, he almost contradicts it, because the scriptures give very clear guidelines about promises and vows. Very, very clear guidelines. Here's what it says. It says, so let me give you, just, I'm going to read them. They're not they're not up on your screen. Here's what one of them says from Deuteronomy. It says, you must fear the Lord your God and serve him. And when you take an oath, you must only use his name. So that was the instructions in the book of Deuteronomy. You know, that you're to fear God, and when you make a vow, the only one you can swear by is God. You're like, I swear to God, I'm going to do this. The only one that you could swear by would be God. Or in Deuteronomy chapter 10, it says, you must fear the Lord your God and worship him and cling to him. Your oaths must be in his name alone. You were to swear in his name. He alone is your God, the one who's worthy of your praise. And the Jewish people were commanded, when they made a vow, they were to make a vow based upon who God was. That's what they were supposed to make a vow on. And then it goes on in some other passages. It says this, and they were to be, because they were to be very, very careful. If you're going to promise something on, you know, God, you know, like God's behind you on this promise, you better make sure you follow through on it. That's the emphasis of these verses. Do not bring shame on the name of your God by using it to swear falsely. A man who makes a vow to the Lord or makes a pledge under an oath must never break it. He must do exactly what he said he would do. When you make a vow to the Lord your God, be prompt in fulfilling whatever you promise him. For the Lord your God demands that you promptly fulfill all your vows, or you will be guilty of sin. So they were, the people of God were directed, if you're going to make a vow, if you make a vow, use God's name. And if you use God's name, you better be sure that you do that. Everybody got, that's the picture of the Old Testament. By the time the New Testament was written, and you know, Jesus' time period, what had happened is they had devolved, not evolved, but they had devolved to the place where they realize, I can't swear using God's name, because if I swear or make a vow using God's name and I don't do it, yeah, I'm in deep doo-doo, okay? I like this trouble to be, you know, going to be paid. So what they did was then they started substituting things for God. So they started putting other things. So they said, that's why Jesus said, don't swear by Jerusalem because it's the city of God. Don't swear by, you know, heaven because it's God's, you know, throne. Don't swear by the, you know, earth because it's God's footstool. And don't swear by your head because if you have hair still, you can't change the color of it. That's what, because people would substitute using the same emphasis or importance on the swearing, but knowing it's not, you know, it's not God. Now, again, that's how it started devolving. So people would not swear by God because they knew if I had to swear by God, I have to do it. But then they got to the place, and it had devolved to where now there were rules about what swearing, again, making a vow, whether you vowed something, whether you had to keep it, you know, make it happen or not, whether you fulfilled it or not. In the Mishnah, which is the old, the oral traditions of the Torah, the old oral traditions of the religious leaders, in there they had guidelines that if you swore by Jerusalem, you had to keep your vow, or you didn't have to keep your vow. But if you swore while you were facing Jerusalem, then you had to keep your vow. So I could be facing this way, and I swear by Jerusalem that I'm going to tell you the truth. I swear by Jerusalem this is a brand new car. I swear by Jerusalem, you know, this car has never been in a flood. Whatever it happens to be. You know, when you swear all those things, you didn't have to hold up. You know, like, you know, I'll give you an illustration here in just a second. But if you were facing Jerusalem and you said that stuff, then you were held to your vow. It's kind of like kids. You know, the kids who go, I'm telling you the truth. You know, I'm telling you the truth. Or I'm telling you the truth. Cross all their fingers and like, I'm telling you the truth. I promise. And then you like find out there weren't. Like, but I had my fingers crossed. That's kind of the picture that's being painted here that Jesus says. And so they'd gone to that place and Jesus goes, no, you guys don't understand. There is something behind this. There is something behind the idea that when Jesus says you don't make a vow. What he's trying to get at is, you know what? Don't make promises. Okay? And he's not, this is not a, I just don't have time to go through the whole thing. This is not talking about you don't sign a paper to buy your house, or you don't sign a paper to, you know, your car, or you sign the papers when you go to the doctor. It's not talking about that. It's talking about personal relationships and business relationships. He's saying, don't make promises. Don't make promises if you can't keep them. And tell you the truth and keep your word. Tell the truth and keep your word. See, what Jesus is doing when he's calling all these disciples, he's calling them out of the Jewish world, out of the Old Testament Jewish world, out of the devolved Jewish world that they were in. He's calling them out of them and saying, you are going to be a new people. You're going to be a new people that are called by my name. You're going to be a new people. And what did Jesus say he was? He was the what? The truth. So he's calling a group of people out from everything that's going on, even the Jewish world. He's calling them out, and you're going to be a new people. You're going to be a new family. You're going to be a new movement. You're going to be this thing that's going to be eventually called the church. Here's what he was calling them to, and it'll be up on your screen. He's calling them to live radical truthfulness in a radically deceptive world. That's what he's calling us to do. He's calling you and me, he's calling people in Everett, he's calling people in Los Angeles, he's calling people in Miami to live radically truthful lives in a radically deceptive world. I mean, deception is so permeates our society. I mean, again, we just could start listening. Businessmen, politicians, preachers, teachers, university presidents, professors. You know, I mean, you just go down. I mean, the whole advertising thing is so built upon, you know, if you watch any TV at all and they got, you know, some advertisement comes up for some medicine, they tell you all about the things and like, oh, you're floating through the daisies, you know, and like life's wonderful. And then they give you all the, but, and they give you all of these things down here. If you take this, this could all happen to you. You go, wait a second. So this, like, Watson, dude, that's not real. That's like the 1% that actually, anyway, you know what I'm talking about? We just live in this radically deceptive world. Matter of fact, we live in such a radically deceptive world that we wonder who's telling the truth and what is the truth and how do you figure out what the truth and where do you find the truth? I mean, if you're not asking yourself that question, you need to start asking yourself the question. You know, it's the old thing, you see the thing on the internet where they have Abraham Lincoln, he says, don't believe everything you see on the internet. That's a quote from Abraham Lincoln. And if you don't know what I'm referring to, let me sell you some property, okay? Waterfront property in Arizona, as they say. I mean, we just don't believe, it's hard to know who do you believe. Does everybody know what I'm talking about? Because we live in this radically deceptive world. And Jesus is saying, but no, because he's the truth. He's the truth. You know, we live in this world that's radically deceptive, but we're not citizens of this radically deceptive world. If you've said yes to Jesus, if you've surrendered your life to him, to follow him, you are no longer a citizen of this planet. You're a visitor on this planet. You're a citizen of heaven, and the earth might be radically deceptive, but heaven is radically honest. Because it's the commodity of earth is, you know, like if you're gonna buy something, you got earnest money and, you know, leave your code and all, you know, all those kinds of things. In heaven, you don't have to do any of that because the commodity in heaven, the collateral is honesty. It's the truth. He's the King of truth. The Spirit, if you've said yes to Jesus, the Spirit of God lives in you. If you've surrendered your life to him, and he's called what? The Spirit of what? The Spirit of truth. That's what he's called. Proverbs has dozens of verses about telling the truth. The Lord detests lying lips, but he delights in those who tell the truth. The Apostle Paul wrote about it, you know, in his letters. He said, stop telling lies. Let us tell our neighbors the truth. And Jesus simply said it this way. He just said, just say a simple, yes, I will, or no, I won't. Anything beyond that is from the father of lies, the evil one, the father of lies. Now, let me give you two, because we're running out of time. Let me give you two quick illustrations here. And they're illustrations and they're applications. Okay? So, let me give you these. And this is three stairs, if you haven't figured that out. Three stairs. The middle one right here is trust. Okay? The middle one's here is trust. When we're asking the question, who do I trust? Who do I believe? Is this true? Is this not true? How do I know? All of those kinds of things. This is trust. Trust is always, you have to step on honesty to get to trust. So this bottom one is being honest. You cannot bypass, you know, like I'm just going to jump over honesty and land on truth, on trust. Let me say it this way. I would challenge you to tell me someone who you trust who is not honest with you, who lies to you. You can't come up with them because it does not work that way. And to the degree that a person is honest is the degree you can trust them, unless you're an idiot. Okay, if you're an idiot, you could say, well, yeah, they lie to me, but I trust them. Like, what is wrong with you? Why would you ever trust someone who lies to you? Does everybody get the picture? Okay, so, and then the last one. So, you got to be honest, and you got to be radically honest, because the only way someone can trust you is if you're radically honest. Now, someone can tell you something you don't want to hear. They can tell you something you don't like. But if they tell you the truth, you know, like, I don't like that, but you know you can trust them because they got your best interest in mind. Yeah, they're telling you, you know, they're telling you, like, you know, you got broccoli in your teeth. I mean, like, ever have someone do that, tell you got broccoli? I just go, thank you, thank you, thank you. Because the next person is not going to tell me, and I don't want to walk around with broccoli in my teeth or whatever else it happens to be. You guys know what I'm talking about? So when someone tells you something you don't want to hear, but it is true, you trust them even though you don't like what they told you. They were hard words. Maybe you had a boss that told you something, and they were hard words, like a Gene who has all kinds of employees. Sometimes he has to tell someone a hard thing. But if he tells them the hard thing and it's the truth, then he can be trusted. Okay, one more step in this. And that's this line. I hope I spelled it right. Respect. Respect. Okay. So, I do exactly the same thing. I would say, okay, if someone's honest with you, you trust them. And if you trust them, you respect them. Now, I would challenge and I would say, okay, tell me someone that you respect who you don't trust. Tell me someone you respect who isn't honest with you. Well, the president. Well, you might respect the president because he's the president, but if he's not an honest president, if he's not a trustworthy president, you don't respect him in the traditional sense of the word. Right? I mean, if you've got a boss that's honest and you trust him, then you respect your boss. But if you know your boss is dishonest, you have very little trust in that boss. And because you have very little trust in that boss, you have very little respect in that boss. Everybody get the picture? Okay. So, that's one of the practical reasons. I mean, the scriptures say don't make a vow. The scriptures say if you make a vow, use God, and then you better keep it. And Jesus says don't make any vows. Don't make promises. Just let your yes be yes and your no be no. Just tell the truth. Part of the practical reason behind it is if you are not a truth teller, if you are not a truth teller, people will not trust you. If you're not a truthful husband, your wife will not trust you. If you're not a truthful wife, your husband will not trust you. If you're not a truthful parent, I mean, how many times as parents have we had to say things we did not want to say to our kid? But if you're honest with them, and if you say you're going to do something, you do it, then they trust you. They may not like some of the things you say, but they trust you, and then they respect you as the parent. I mean, too often what happens is parents will go, well, they don't respect me. And you have to ask the question, why don't they respect you? Is it because they can't get past these two? Everybody with me? Okay. Now, one last thought, and we'll pray. And that is, years ago, 30 years ago, we had a lady from our church who lived in the apartment that's attached to our house, and some of you remember when. But she told me this little quip, and I didn't realize until just recently that little quip comes from Voltaire. But it goes like this, and it'll be up on your screen. Everything you say should be true, but not everything true should be said. Everything you say should be true, but not everything that's true should be said. Because we're talking about radical honesty does not give you the right to be rude. It does not give you the right to be mean. It does not give you the right to spout out whatever judgmental things you want to spout out. There are things that are true that you keep inside of you. Everybody with me? So just because something's true, it's like, well, I'm telling you the truth. Well, you might be telling me the truth, but you're being rude. You know, one time, kind of tying this together and this statement appeared together. One time a few years ago, and then we'll pray. One time a few years ago, I don't know, 20 years ago, whatever, we were interviewing a teacher here at the academy. And the teacher, you know, we got their application, and in the application, you know, all the story about how they came to faith and, you know, where they'd worked and all those kinds of things. And but on the personal stuff, the person had marked that they were single. And then we're in, you know, doing the interview, and the person, you know, somebody asks a question, the person starts talking about before they were divorced. And there was, you know, like on the application, it was like married, divorced, single, you know, like that. And so, like, hold it, time out here. Time out here. I thought you said you were single. Now you're telling us you're divorced. Which is it? Which is it? And why did you not mark divorced when it was right there on the box? And the person, the applicant, said, well, I thought if I marked divorce, you would never hire me because I was divorced. And I said, and there was a bunch of people doing the interview, I said, you know what? We have divorced people. We've always had divorced people on our church, on our school staff. We always have. But you're not going to get this job. I just told him. I said, you're not going to get this job because you were not honest. And if you weren't honest on this, what else have you not been honest about? Well, I was afraid. Doesn't matter to me what the motive behind it was. You got to tell the truth. Because if you don't tell the truth, people can't honest you. I'll trust you. And if they can't trust you, they don't respect you. Does everybody get the picture? So, again, on resumes, be honest. On applications, be honest. On, you know, his education background, be honest. Be honest, be honest, be honest. Be radically, as a follower of Jesus, be radically honest in a radically dishonest world. But that doesn't mean you have to say everything that comes through your mind, true or not true. Keep your mouth shut. Right? I mean, that's what the scriptures teach. Let everything be said, you know, salted. So everything, I mean, there's all kinds of scriptures about this idea. So put that slide back up and we'll pray. Everything you say should be true, but not everything that's true should be said. Now, I could ask for a commitment right now. Okay, how many of you are going to stand? You're going to be radically honest. But that would be going against the thing because that would be asking you to make a promise, about a vow. Jesus says using the Nike, you know, motto is what? Just do it. Just do it. And if you don't know how to tell the truth, if you don't know how to tell the truth in the middle of what you're going through, don't say anything until Jesus has given you the understanding of how to tell the truth. How to tell someone, you know, you got really bad breath. Or whatever that happens to be. Let's stand together. Well, Lord, I pray that you'd help each of us in this room apply these ideas about being people who tell the truth, people who know when to tell the truth, how to tell the truth, that we wouldn't be rude and obnoxious, but we would be radically people that want to live radical honesty in a radically dishonest world. Teach us how to do that, Jesus. Us in the room, those that are online, those that will join us later because of work and other kinds of reasons. People that are joining us from Alaska, people that are joining us from Oak Harbor. And Lord, apply this to people's hearts. Remind them throughout this week. Remind them. Remind them of this whole idea that you said, say yes and mean it. You said no and mean it. In Jesus' name, amen. Amen. God bless you. Don't forget to give either in person or give online.